This passage is going to be from Mark chapter 4. We're going to read verses 35 through 41 in the NIV. I'll give you a moment to find that, and it is also up on the screen, so you can read along there. So Mark 4, verses 35 through 41. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, so the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. We're just thankful for the mothers, and we want to continue to bless you and walk with you as we know that the Lord sees you. And thankful also for the College Fellowship members who came and led us in worship. I know for many of them, this is the last Sunday that they're here with us, and they're going to go to whatever the Lord has prepared for them. So we want to continue to pray with you and keep you in our hearts as well. So most of us, we have some form of dying, and what's fascinating is the very specific ways that each of us imagined this playing out, right? Mine was, it used to be, for a while, it was dying in a submarine, right? I'm not sure exactly where it came from. Maybe I was watching Jaws when I was too little, or, you know, some war movie, and I'd imagine myself trapped in this metal tube far under the sea. The pressure of all of that water pressing in from every direction, and nobody would know where I'm at and what happened to me, and nobody could find me even if they wanted to, and that's really scary. And, you know, I'd never been in a submarine before, so it's not a rational fear, but something about that scenario, this darkness, the depth, the utter isolation, the sense of being completely beyond any rescue, captures something about what certain seasons of life feel like. Because I've heard the old saints say, if you're not in a storm, you're coming out of a storm, or you're headed into a storm, right? Storms will come in this life, and that's not pessimism, that's just wisdom that's gained in the school of hard knocks, right? The question is not whether you will face a storm. Rather, the question is what you will discover about yourself when you're in a storm. And more importantly, who you will discover is in the boat with you. So we are in a series called Discipleship with Jesus. Now, over the past weeks, we've been building a portrait, not of a program, not of a curriculum, but of a life. We've seen that disciples are people who reorder their lives around Jesus, rather than trying to add Jesus into their pre-made plans. We've seen that disciples are given new eyes to see and new ears to hear, that the kingdom is visible to those who follow Jesus in a way that it isn't available to those that are watching from a distance. And we've seen that discipleship is fundamentally about reordering of our loves, right? From the love of this world, its securities, its approval, and its comforts, to the love of Jesus and his kingdom. That reordering doesn't just happen overnight. It's a lifelong process, and it rarely happens in a gentle way. So today, we're going to see that there's another thing that's getting reordered in us as we follow Jesus, not just our loves, but also our fears. There's two kinds of fear that compete for the human heart, and the storms of this life has a way of surfacing what our fears are. And it forces us to reckon with which ones has a deeper hold on us. So one kind of fear, it curves us inward towards self-protection, self-preservation, and accusations against the people around us and even God himself. The other kind of fear draws us outward and downward into stillness, into awe, into worship. The storm will bring either one out of us. And in the process, it will show us not only who Jesus is, but who we are. So here's today's piece to add to our portrait of a disciple. A disciple is someone who is learning slowly, imperfectly, often while absolutely terrified, to trust Jesus in the midst of the storm. Now, I want to highlight that word, learning. Excuse me. This story is not a rebuke of people who have walked away from faith, because we're talking about disciples who are in the boat with Jesus. They follow Jesus when he said, let's go. They're trying. They're trying to follow Jesus, but discipleship is not a destination that you arrive at. It's a school that you attend. And Jesus, it turns out, is a teacher who's not afraid to use some very difficult classrooms. Three lessons here in today's passage. One lesson, the disciples panic in the storm. And this is fairly typical of us. Two, Jesus demonstrates his power over the storm. And three, there's a promise in the storm. So let's look at the panic in the storm first. Mark introduces this episode with that day. If you look just in the what happens prior to this, Jesus has just spent the whole day beside the Sea of Galilee. He's been teaching enormous crowds in parables. And then, without pausing to rest, he turns to the disciples and he says, let's go over to the other side. So the disciples simply go because he said, let's go. And that's a posture of discipleship. The crossing begins with a word from Jesus. Although, now, they could have said this. Hold on now. Is this the best time to do this? Because this is the end of the day. Shouldn't we wait until tomorrow when we have daylight? Or shouldn't we wait until maybe the weather forecast is better? But they trust Jesus. He said, let's go. So they trust him at his word, and Jesus leads them straight into a terrible storm. Now, I want you to understand something about the storm. These are professional fishermen. They grew up on this very lake, right? They've been reading water, and they've been reading weather all of their lives. So when they're scared for their lives, the situation is really, really bad. It's genuinely desperate. The waves are breaking over the boat, into the boat. The hull is filling. Mark says it was nearly swamped. In other words, it's almost sinking. These are not anxious beginners overreacting to a little chop. These are seasoned men who sincerely believe that they're about to die. Fear makes people do some funny things. It doesn't just stay inside of you. It comes out, and it starts, many times, it starts lashing out at others. And, you know, I've seen this happen, not at sea, but in communities, in churches, in families. When there are times of real uncertainty, when there are major transitions, changes that you didn't ask for, when fear takes hold, things that stayed hidden under the surface breaks out into the open. People who should be pulling together start pulling apart. Old grievances that was never let go start coming up. Accusations fly. And it doesn't matter whether these accusations are grounded in fact or not. And because we need somebody to lash out at. Fear, left unchecked, doesn't simply make us sad. It makes us lash out in accusations. So the disciples cry out, teacher, don't you care if we drown? Now notice what they're saying. They don't ask Jesus for help. They don't plead. Instead, they accuse. Right? And this accusation has a long echo in biblical history. Think all the way back to the Garden of Eden. After the fall, when God comes looking for Adam, and he asks what happened, Adam's answer is devastating. You know what he says? And he's filled with fear. He's been hiding. And then so now he has to come out into the open. And he says, "The woman that you gave me, she told me to eat." So that's the accusation. The accusation that's aimed at God, hiding behind the accusation, aimed at someone who was just until now his beloved. "You did this, God. You put her here with me, so this is on you." And so because of his fear, Adam decided to throw Eve under the bus and level an accusation against God. Why? To justify himself, to try to evade his own guilt. When I'm running outdoors, these days it's a great weather to be running, enjoying the beautiful trails of Philadelphia. I pass by a lot of people in the middle of their conversations, and I catch little pieces of what they're talking about. And you know what I overhear the most? Complaints and accusations. People are usually in the midst of talking about how so-and-so is so horrible, so unfair, so unreasonable. You know what I ever don't hear? Confessions, self-reflections. Most of the talk is about judging others and justifying ourselves. What do we do? Think about this. What do we choose to talk about the most? If we were to keep a tally of what kinds of words come out of our mouths, would we find more accusations or more confessions? More lessons about how God is teaching us to grow into the image of His Son. And when we hear others uttering accusations, usually they want us to come to their side, right? We need to become more mature in discerning. We need to ask, is this coming from a place that truly loves truth? That's seeking justice to be done, that desires to see righteousness being done? Or is this coming from a place of self-protection, blame shifting, evasion of the truth about ourselves, which is the posture of Adam post-fall? Disciples are people who are learning about what is really going on under the surface in human hearts. So here, the disciples in the boat, they instinctively take on the same accusatory posture of Adam, don't they? You know, pressure exposes, storms expose what's already there. The storm doesn't create the distrust of Jesus. It tosses it to the surface. And the question that they ask is not really about drowning. It's about love. Do you care? Do you see what kind of pain and suffering that we are going through? Or are our problems not that high on your priority list? Are you the kind of God that we've always suspected? Present when things are going well, but nowhere to be found when things are hard. So this is what Jesus is responding to. This is what he names. The word that he uses to name their fear in the Greek is delos, which means something like a cowardly, but specifically the kind of cowardice that's rooted in distrust and suspicion. So it's not simply a word for being scared, it's a word for fear that jumps to a conclusion about somebody because of their fear. Delos fear curves inwards. It self-protects. It accuses. It says something false about Jesus, and he names it. Not to shame them, but because he's about to replace it with something better. So here's the second one. It's the power over the storm. When the disciples wake him, Mark says that Jesus gets up and immediately he rebukes the wind. He had been sleeping. You know, while the disciples were terrified out of their minds, he's been sleeping in the boat. It's a picture of somebody who carries no anxiety, somebody who's at home in his own creation. And when he awakes, he doesn't look at charts or calculate wind speed. Instead, he immediately speaks to the storm the same way that he speaks to demons. That word that Jesus uses here is phimoo in the Greek, which means be muzzled, be silenced. In Mark chapter 1, at the synagogue in Capernaum, when Jesus rebuked an unclean spirit, he uses that same word, and it comes out immediately. You know, Mark is pointing something out here, that Jesus has the authority that commands the spiritual forces of chaos and the physical forces of chaos, right? There's a pattern here. And for people in the ancient Near Eastern world, it was unmistakable. Because in the world of the ancient Near East, the sea was a symbol not merely, you know, it didn't symbolize just, oh, it's a big body of water. It represents the force of chaos. And it's this primordial threat, the formless monster of darkness that can come at any time and overrun an ordered world. So in the scriptures, there's only one who holds authority over the forces of chaos. In Psalm 107, verses 23 to 32, the text describes a scene that's almost identical to this one. Here are sailors, they're out in the sea, and they're caught in a storm. And their courage is melting, and they're crying out to the Lord to save them. And then it says, he stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. That's not describing a human figure. That's describing Yahweh, the God of heaven and earth. It goes back further still. All the way back to, you need to remember back to Genesis chapter 1. Because you remember what it says? In the beginning, before creation was ordered, the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the deep. And so God speaks into this chaos and into the darkness, and chaos heals. Light comes. Order comes. Boundaries come. The waters were gathered and named and given a place. The voice of God is a thing that creation cannot disobey. And here in a boat in the Sea of Galilee, that voice speaks again. Quiet. Be still. And it was immediately and completely calm. Not gradually, not mostly. The creation snaps the tension. The chaos that was roaring like a lion trying to consume the disciples now retreats and sits like a trained puppy. Now, so watch what happens to the disciples. Their fear doesn't disappear. It transforms. They lost fear. The cowardly, accusatory, self-protecting panic gives way to phobos megas, the great fear, holy terror, sacred awe. The disciples are more undone by Jesus than they were by the storm, right? Think back to Simon Peter in Luke chapter 5. After the miraculous catch of fish, he comes to Jesus and falls at his knees before Jesus and says, "Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man." That is not the same fear as the fear of drowning. That's the fear of standing in the presence of the Holy One. And you start to see your own smallness, and it becomes unbearably clear. It's not a fear that drives you away. It's a fear that drives you down into stillness and into worship. That's the proper reordering of fear, right? And the storm is the classroom where this is learned. You cannot learn it anywhere else. Jesus turns around, and he asks them, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Now notice what he's not saying. He doesn't say, "Have you no faith at all?" He says, "Still, not yet." Because what he's saying is, faith is a country that they're traveling towards. And this is a mile marker on the road. And in their awe and their fear, new fear, right? The fear of God, they ask the question that is bigger even than when they would, you know, if they would survive the storm. "Who is this?" they ask. "Even the wind and the waves obey him." I want to stay here because this question is crucial. The disciples have been with Jesus for a while now. They've watched him heal. They've watched him cast out demons. They've watched him teach with an authority unlike anything that they had heard. They thought that they knew who he was. And then now they're not sure that they know anything. This experience has scrambled their categories and it's left them in wonder, in awe, in reverent confusion. That, the scriptures tells us, is not failure. That's the beginning of the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord It's the posture of standing before somebody whose greatness you can no longer contain within your pre-existing categories. Somebody who keeps on expanding beyond the limits of your understanding. It's the experience of your mental picture of Jesus cracking open because it turns out that he's bigger than you imagined. The disciples come into this evening with a working definition of who Jesus is, but then they leave with a question. And that question, who is this? It's the most faithful thing that they said all evening. The storm was the classroom, the crisis was the curriculum, and the lesson was about Jesus. Here's what I want us to hear. The places that frighten you the most are the places where Jesus is most likely to become larger to you than he was before. And you will never know Jesus more deeply than you will in the places that scares you the most. And this is the other side of the same truth. You will never know yourself more clearly either. Because the storm doesn't lie. It shows you exactly what fear is ruling over you. Exactly where your loves are longing for exactly what accusation is sitting beneath the surface. Friends, this is not comfortable for us to learn, but it is mercy. Because a disciple who has seen themselves clearly in the middle of the storm is a disciple who's ready to be transformed. Here's the third point, the promise through the storm. So, before the storm, as they were setting out, Jesus said to the disciples, let's go over to the other side. Now, the disciples probably missed it when Jesus said it, but he was promising that they would get over to the other side. They would make it, no matter what might come in between. Because the promise of arrival is greater than the experience of danger. The disciples weren't thinking about this in the middle of, you know, what, in the midst of the storm, in the midst of their terror, but in the end, they did arrive. They were always going to arrive. The storm can't change what Jesus already declared. This is what he's offering to us, to all of us. Not a storm-free life. Not a guarantee that a faith, that our faith is going to keep the waves from crashing over into the boat. What he is offering, though, is his presence through the storm. No matter how terrible, no matter how scary, no matter how terrifying, and his promise is that you're going to make it over to the other side. Now, how can you be sure? What's the guarantee? What's the basis for believing that he's going to make good on the promise of your arrival? Right now, the water is rising. You are sinking. What? And what's going to give you assurance in the middle of that? Now, for that answer, we need to look at another man in another storm. You know the story of Jonah? He was running away from God. He was running hard away from God. God said, go this way. He went the other way, in the exact opposite direction of where he'd been sent. And God sent a great storm to intercept him. So he's in the ship, and the sailors are panicking. They're crying out, and they're throwing cargo overboard, and Jonah is below deck. He's fast asleep. And they find him, and they wake him, and then they say, so who of us sinned that the gods are angry? So let's draw lots, and the lots fall on Jonah. And so the truth comes out. Jonah is the cause of the storm. His rebellion had brought the storm down on all of them, endangering all of their lives. And Jonah says, throw me into the sea. And when the sailors throw him into the sea, the storm immediately stops. Now, if this sounds familiar to you, it's not by accident, right? The disciples are in the Sea of Galilee, and they're living inside of the Jonah story. But here's the difference. Jonah is cast into the waters because of his own sins. He deserved the storm. His guilt was real. Even then, God is merciful. A fish swallows him, and 3 days later, he's cast out onto dry land. Jesus is not guilty. He deserves no storm at all. Unlike Jonah, Jesus is going exactly where his Father has sent him. And yet, the disciples' accusation, don't you care? Don't you care if we drown? Echoes the oldest accusation in the human history, the one that began in the garden. God, this is your fault. You put us here. You don't care. Although Jesus is innocent of every charge that's ever leveled against him, by the disciples, by Adam, by every human heart that has ever turned fear into accusation, he absorbs it. He takes it upon himself. And he was heading with full intention towards a storm that's going to make the storm on the Sea of Galilee look like a breeze. Because where was he headed? He was headed into the storm of Gethsemane. He was headed towards the storm of the cross. He was headed into the tomb, the storm of every divine judgment against every sin, every accusation, every faithless day lost moment in human history. That storm gathers its full force and breaks upon Jesus, the innocent one, and he was healed into the deep, in our place. Jesus says as much in Matthew 12. The Pharisees demand a sign. And Jesus says, no sign will be given except the sign of Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. 3 days in the belly of the deep. The disciples in the boat, they don't know about this yet, right? They can't see it. They don't know that the one who just stilled the storm is going to allow a far greater storm to swallow him. They don't know that the voice that said, quiet, be still, is going to fall silent on the cross. They don't know that the one who slept without a care in the storm is going to be plunged into a darkness deeper than any sea. But he goes in. He went under. He was consumed by the waters that we deserved, that was coming our way. And on the third day, he came out on the other side. Now, when he did, the chaos is not simply paused, it's defeated permanently. The resurrection is not just a reversal of death, it's the final and decisive word over every force of chaos and darkness and fear that has ever threatened to undo us. See, remember how the story of the Bible began? Chaos and the Spirit of God over the face of the deep, and God's voice bringing order. The resurrection is that same movement, but fully and finally the waters are stilled. Not temporarily, not until the next storm, but once and for all. Because look where the biblical story is headed. In Revelation 22, in the New Jerusalem, there's a river that runs through the center of that city, clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, with the tree of life on its banks for the healing of the nations. The waters that once represented chaos and death that threatened to undo life has now been tamed into river of life, a source of our life and of flourishing. The sea that tried to swallow the disciples is on its way to becoming the river that waters the city of God. The resurrection has sealed the deal. The storm's days are unnumbered. That's why we can be certain that we're going to reach the other side. Not because our faith is strong enough, not because we managed to avoid faithless fear or didn't give in to issuing accusations to avoid blame or maintain perfect trust through every storm in this life, but because the one in the boat who is with us has already been through the ultimate storm in our place. And the storm could not keep its hold on him. He has come out on the other side, and because he's with us now in the boat, as we are going through this journey, we are for sure going to reach our destination. The disciples asked, "Don't you care if we drown?" The cross is the answer to that question. The most unambiguous declaration of care in the history of the universe. He cared so much that he went under for us. He went into the deep so that we would never face the deep alone and never be held there. So, this is what a disciple is. Not somebody who has no fear, but somebody whose fear is being reordered. Not somebody who doesn't go through any more storms, but somebody who's learning storm by storm to know more deeply the one who commands the waves and yet went under the waves in their place. A disciple is somebody who comes into the storm with a working definition of Jesus but comes out on the other side with a question, who is this? And finds that the question itself is the beginning of the fear of the Lord, the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of everything. The old saints are right. If you're not in a storm, you're coming out of one or you are headed into one. The question is never whether the storm is going to come. The question is what you're going to find out about yourself when it does come. And who you are going to discover is in the boat with you. You are somewhere on that journey today. Some of you are in the middle of a storm right now, and you know exactly what I mean. Some of you are between storms, catching your breath. Some of you are feeling the first gusts of that are coming at you, and you don't know yet what lies ahead of you. And all of you, if you are following Jesus, will eventually find yourself in a boat that's taking on water. When you do, remember who's on the boat with you. Not a God who's indifferent to whether you're going to get consumed by the waves and drown in the deep, but one who's still the chaos at creation. The one whom even the wind and the waves obey. The one who was hurled into the deepest waters in the universe for your sake and came back. The one who said, let's go to the other side, and means it. That's the lesson of the storm. Friends, followers, disciples of Jesus, are you learning it? When you are, you'll regularly ask in awe and wonder, who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. Who is this? He didn't hold back anything of himself, but gave himself over to be thrown into the deep in our place. Who is this? All of the forces of darkness and chaos couldn't hold him down, but he rose and took away their power, and there's nothing for us to fear anymore. Keep learning that. Keep learning that from Jesus. He's going to be gracious, and he's going to be faithful, and he will keep teaching you throughout this journey. Let's pray.